Welcome to Low Standards and Pours. It is Wednesday, September 2nd, 8:55, Detroit Rock City. We are back. We had a little hiatus there for a little while. Bill and I got busy, and we weren't able to put together our shows like we usually do. So hopefully we can give you a good show today and hope you guys listen in. And my partner Bill is having problems logging in. I think he might have some internet problems. So we're going to give him a minute and see if he logs in. And if he does, we'll continue on the show here. I hope everybody's having a good week. And I certainly have. Work's been busy, which is good. It doesn't look like Bill's going to be able to log in. I think he's struggling on the other side. And I certainly can't hold the show myself, so we'll see here. I am listening to some new song I heard, in case you guys might want to know. It is Clap for the Killers by Street Sweeper Society. Good song. Check it out. I cut it on Spotify. It's on my regular playlist. I don't know how many people use Spotify. I certainly do. It plays on everything. It is probably the best thing that I've ever invested in. $9 for $10 a month. Unlimited songs. And it refers you new songs you haven't heard of in a long time. Oh, shit. You there, Bill? What a mess that was. Great. I was just like, okay, I'm going to try to wing this thing myself, but I don't know if I've got the capabilities. A little rocky start there.
Yeah.
Oh, you with me?
Yeah. Hang on. This has been a turn off.
My Spotify here and get back to you. How are you doing?
Oh man, it's been a crazy week. We've missed a couple shows.
We certainly have. I think we've both been a little bit busy and I got caught up a couple times.
That's all right though. Busy is good.
Yeah,
you know, it's as much as we got the four fans that we disappointed twice. you know, I feel bad for those four people that aren't related to us who actually listen.
Yeah, that's sat by their podcast for hours waiting for us to come on.
Right, and just not, we never showed, and it had to be depressing.
Just because, ghosted, you know, the whole show.
Yeah, because, you know, we're so entertaining and so important to listen to. You know, because that's just how life works, brother. But yeah, no, I'm super freaking busy, man.
That's good. I was just getting ready to X the show because it was such a lousy beginning. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I saw you pop up there and we made the connection.
Yeah. No, my Podbean was acting up. I think my phone is broke or stupid or something. But once you went live, I was able to find you. It wouldn't let me deal with any of my favorites, you know?
Oh, really? Yeah, I mean, it locked up a little bit.
It is what it is. It's stupid. I'm over it.
That's good.
That's the story of my last 2 weeks. Pretty much I'm over it.
Yeah. How many? You cranking out some hours over there, right?
It's 10 hour days. Everybody wants everything yesterday.
And yeah.
No, everything is a super emergency. And I'm just like, I'm over it. When everything is a rush, nothing is a rush.
You know? Right.
Everything has to happen yesterday, well, then yesterday never happened.
Yeah, I lost. Well, not that I lost, but I was helping out my broker show some homes, and you know, they want to. So you know the industry. So
yeah,
it's a seller's market. For every house out there, is probably about 10 buyers, and they are contingent. I mean, obviously, they have to sell their home before, you know, they can purchase the home they want to.
And it's an average.
I try to explain that to them, and they had a what it was is we sold them a home 5 years ago. Right. Some neighbors that are giving them a lot of problems, so they want to move and get into a different school district and move over closer to where I'm at. And so with this bad experience, they almost were homeless. And my broker had to step in and clear everything up due to this other real estate agent from another company that kind of botched everything. And we took them back over as clients. But what's going on is that they understand the industry, but, you know, they'll shoot me a text at like, you know, 11:45 at night, and they want to go see the home the next day at like 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, it just doesn't work that way. Right. You know, you need time to set these appointments up and make sure you can get in. And, you know, I've got schedules too and stuff. So they got upset, and I think, I don't know what's going on with them now, but everybody's desperate to buy homes these days. You know, interest rates are dirt low, and people want to move, and they want to move fast. But,
well, you know, and the other part of it too is everybody, there's a lot of other stresses.
Yeah.
Just in general. And everybody is a little bit extra on edge, it seems, for the last, say maybe 5 or 6 months, give or take.
Yeah.
You know, with something going on around here between a pandemic and an election and, you know, idiots doing things on every side of the planet. And pretty much there's just added stress. And then you throw in moving and buying a house, and everybody just loses their shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I'm tired of sweeping it.
Yeah. You can still hear me, right? You can still hear me, right? Oh, all right,
yeah,
good.
Sure.
I turned off my external speaker and went to my earbud here. Does that sound better by any chance?
I don't know. I wasn't picking up any echo, but, you know.
All right, let's go.
It's better when you don't use that external speaker.
Yeah, I don't know why I've been using it anyways. It's only been what? Yeah, it's only been a year. We're still trying to figure out this technology shit, you know?
Wait, we're using technology?
I think so. I think that's what they call it. Yeah, but, it's been pretty crazy. I've got a lot of friends coming to me now asking about real estate, and they're like, you know, do you think maybe I should get into real estate? And everybody thinks it's an easy game, you know? And I said, well, you know, it takes a lot of money, and it's running your own business. Don't think you have a license, people come and use you to buy or sell a house, you know?
Well, you know, and the thing about it is, you know, just having the license doesn't make you a professional.
Exactly.
You know, there's a lot of time and energy that goes into learning the ins and outs and being able to actually broker the deal.
Yeah.
Realtors, you know, my side of the story is as the guy behind the scenes, I don't have to deal with any of that crap. But realtors have to have a certain personability and a way to smooth things over and understand what does work and what doesn't work and be able to head off problems before they show up.
Right, right.
Realtor is the guy that does negotiations for you. You know, that's the person, because it's like having lawyers.
Yeah.
In a divorce or something like that, because you're not going to talk to your ex-wife. Your lawyer is going to talk to her lawyer, and they're going to figure shit out. And that's the same idea with real estate brokers, is they talk to each other and they figure shit out, and they know how the game is played. And they're like, all right, well, these people are anxious, and this is what they want to do, and this is what really is going to work. And then, you know, they try and explain that to their broker friend, who's going to explain that to the sellers, and they're okay. Well, you know, and it's just a back and forth. But if you don't understand and know the game inside and out, it's tough to get started, especially when it's crazy like this.
Yeah.
You get started now and you last three deals,
right?
You might be okay, but now is not the time to get started.
Yeah, people have to realize, you know, you're essentially project management, and you're taking somebody's livelihood, their family, out of one house and putting them into another, and you have to make sure that your T's are crossed and I's are dotted to make that happen. You can't make any mistakes. And I think a lot of, you know, what happens today is, you know, getting a real estate license here in Michigan is actually fairly easy. I know California, you've got to take college level classes, which should be mandatory nationwide,
right,
but it's not. But What's happening is, you know, these people, they're not even college educated. Nothing wrong, you know, but they don't have anything to go. They're coming from maybe retail, or they're coming from the food industry, or they're coming from HR. Yeah, they don't know how to negotiate.
Well, auto salesman would be okay, but
yeah, it's closer, you know.
Yeah, but it's more of the dealing with the people and making the deal work. But, you know, again, it's knowing the paperwork and understanding when somebody says something to you about LTV and this, that, and the other yeah. little terminologies you got to learn. You got to understand all that shit.
Yeah, I had
talk to you, brother. Close a deal, will you?
Yeah, I have. I got one of them coming up. But this is the other thing too, is what I was getting at is that there's a. You know, a lot of these new people that are coming to the market, they don't understand the ethics behind what you're supposed to do. In other words, I just dealt with somebody from one of the major brokers out there. I won't mention any names, but I had a listing. They sent me over an offer, and on the offer, they never put the contingency down. So I spoke to the mortgage rep, and he works for one of the largest brokerages out there as far as mortgages. Yeah, we won't mention any names, but what they did is they buried the contingency on the prequal, which I missed, but there's no reason why it should be on the prequal. It should be on the offer. And you get all the way through, you're probably about 80% of the way through the whole process, and come to find out they have a problem with, you know, the buyers that are buying my house, they have a problem with their house, and that's how it kind of reared its ugly head through the processor. But the guy wouldn't answer the phone when I was calling. So basically what he did is he got this offer accepted, and then he went dark. He wouldn't answer my phones and all that. He put it all back in the processor, and the processor's like, yeah, it's contingent. And I'm like, and it's just bad ethics.
Yeah, when were you going to tell me that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's why he wasn't answering the phone.
I've had a couple in the last couple of days where, you know, the realtor was hanging on to the addendum that showed, you know, concessions, or there was another one with an addendum that completely changed the purchase price. And
like,
I got to see that. Yeah. Because if I'm going to give you a loan for $180,000 and then the purchase price changes, well, then your loan is going to be for $190,000 and you're going to come up short if you don't get the new, I got to reapprove it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I got to rerun stuff. I got to make sure everything is working. Make sure you can still afford it. You know, it's just crazy. But, you know, again, it comes down to if you have the experienced people taking care of your stuff, the problems are fewer.
Yeah.
Especially in a time when things are so crazy like they are now. Everybody is just throwing crap on the wall. And if you really know how to throw the crap, then you're fine. But if you're not dealing with somebody who knows how to fling poo, then, you know, you need a professional poo flinger.
Yeah, you got to have your ducks in a row, that's for sure. You can't be behind the eight ball.
For a professional poo flinger.
So far, so good. My track record with closings is phenomenal. So, you know, knock on wood, the majority of my deals all go through. So you gotta do your homework up front on these deals and get them all lined up, you know.
Because if you don't do your homework, you know what I'm talking
about.
You know what you're saying. You know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, whatever. Sure.
So getting down to a different personal level that.
Sure.
I'll tell you what. So you know how I felt back in March, right? Remember I had a little bug
going on?
I just want to tell everybody, and I'm still dealing with that a little bit. And things have changed. I don't know what it is exactly, but I'll tell anybody that's listening or wants to know. I live in a condo, and I have a condo with some cathedral ceilings, and it's not a huge condo, but Bill, you've been here. It's not small, but it's not big. But I've always read that you're supposed to have a certain amount of humidity in the air, and a buddy of mine dropped off this big humidifier, and I was running it, and I ran it the percentage was way too high for humidity. And what I did is I turned it off for a few months and turned it back on. And what I didn't realize is that the amount of mold that was created on the filter. And when I was running it, I think I ran mold. I pushed mold all the way through this condo, and I came down with some kind of lung infection. And I know it sounds kind of personal and probably doesn't run anything to anybody, but anybody that's using a large humidifier, be careful with your filter. I'm finally, I think, on the back side of it. I mean, that's how long it's been. It'll be a year this month that I've been dealing with that.
Yeah, and
it's crazy. It's during the Hamtramck Music Festival, I had to bow out because it was so bad.
Oh, and that's right.
Remember? I mean, that was the worst. And
just
the first
COVID.
The first day that we were there, I didn't feel that bad, but I didn't feel good. And then it got bad the next day, and I couldn't do it. I just walking around. I mean, you know, it had snowed. It was, you know, we're out walking around the elements and drinking and maybe having a smoke or two. And
you're a couple of pounds extra.
Yeah. And so. So I'm just telling everybody, if you're going to use a humidifier, be careful. Be really careful.
Clean the thing out once in a while.
Yeah, no shit. Do your job.
I got to do that with my, what you call it thing?
That goes into?
My machine.
Yes. Yeah.
I got to wash that thing out every couple days.
Yeah.
Because, it gets gross. And then, past 2 weeks, I go upstairs and I pass out before I even get the thing on my face. So I know there's a little water in there that's gross.
Right.
So hopefully.
Now I'm going to cut you off, but I was watching a short little documentary interview with Tom York and this guy that was doing an interview. I don't remember his name, but Tom York from, I always want to say Coldplay. Tom York from,
one of those bands.
Hold on a second.
90s band?
I got started in the 90s. OK Computer. I'll give it a second, whatever.
It doesn't matter where he's from.
Yeah, they were talking about a book that Tom York was reading, and it was called Why We Sleep. And I started kind of digging into it and stuff. And it's very interesting how important getting good sleep is today. And it's always been, but they don't, we don't know exactly why we sleep. But they were saying that most of us breathe through our mouth when we sleep, which is bad. We're supposed to breathe through our sinuses or through our nose because it filters out. It filters out a lot of the stuff that we breathe in. And also, when we breathe through our mouth, and don't quote me on this, but when we breathe through our mouth, we are breathing through, I believe, the upper portion of our lungs. And when you breathe through your sinuses or through your nose, it brings up air from the bottom part of your lungs. That's what's the most important.
So it's better breathing.
Yeah. And it's, well, there's a lot of
that's why they tell you that in sports.
Yeah.
Breathe through your nose.
Yeah. And
get the good oxygen in there.
Yep.
Good, deep breath.
Yeah. Tom York. Okay. Computer. God, I got the album. I'm going to have to look it up. This is what happens when you turn 50. Jeez. Tom York. Right here.
He is Coldplay.
No, not Coldplay. He's Figures. Radiohead. Gosh. Radiohead. So, but anyways, so I bought the book and I just started digging into it and stuff, and it's pretty interesting.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So you're reading it?
I'm trying to. Yeah. I bought a bunch of books. I bought the book on sleep. I bought one. Neil Peart from Rush passed away, and one of his first books that he wrote was his wife passed first from cancer, and then his daughter passed away shortly after that from a car accident.
Oh,
so he got on his motorcycle and traveled the United States, I believe. I haven't read it yet, but I'm sure maybe it had something to do with Canada too, because he lives in Canada, I believe, in Ontario. He kind of tells about his journey traveling through the United States and some of the things that he did and all that kind of stuff. So it's pretty interesting.
I got to tell you this. I still have this idea in the back of my head. I got to get my first book out, the one I told you about.
Yeah.
The story. But
yeah, the story.
I've got another idea for a book. That I got when I was riding my motorcycle across America. I told you about that, didn't I?
A little bit, yeah. I didn't know you did that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I, when I worked on that boat back in college, we rode, let's see, they put me on a bus and sent me down to Florida. Got on the boat, 100-foot-long yacht, and it was me, the captain, and the first mate who could pilot the thing.
Yeah.
I had enough hours behind the wheel. And so we rotated shifts, 24 hours. We were doing eight-hour shifts, you know, eight on, 16 off, eight on, 16 off.
Yeah.
And piloted the boat from Tampa, Florida to St. Clair Shores, Michigan, through the Erie Canal, up the Hudson River, you know, all along the intercoastal.
No kidding.
Around Cape Hatteras. It was a great trip. 22 days coming up. And then I worked the boat the summer because I ran the kitchen. And then at the end of the summer, put my motorcycle on the boat and rode the 23 days back down to Tampa. I worked there for a couple weeks and then hopped on my motorcycle, went up, visited my brother in Jacksonville when he was still living there, and then rode through the Appalachians and then up and then through Kentucky. You know, I was just cruising around. It took me like 3 days to get back. And it was just the coolest. Well, 3 days of actual riding. It took me five days because I spent a couple days with my brother. As I was riding, you know, here I am, you know, because it's you in the open air. I wear a helmet because I'm not an idiot. But it's just me in the open air, and, you know, I'm riding next to these cars, and you just kind of peek over and you see people talking to each other in their cars, and then they kind of pass you or you kind of pass them, and they're just gone. And you never see him again. And in my mind, as a 22-year-old kid, I was thinking, I wonder what these people are talking about. I wonder if there's a story there.
And right.
The idea came to my head that, you know, maybe I could write a book and just make up stories about these people as I'm passing them.
And I got you.
It would be just a series of short stories.
A little fictional kind of thing.
Yeah, it'd just be a little telltale on just how people are in relationships and just, you know, just things.
Right.
How fun would that be?
That's not bad.
And it would just, you know, it's you know, because I don't know if you remember, was it Stephen King who wrote Cat's Eye?
I believe so. I'm not
it
much
was the same so idea not... where, you know, the cat kind of filtered his way through six or seven different lives of different people as the cat was just going around and it would see things. But of course it was creepy. My story wouldn't be creepy. It would be just a commentary on relationships and people and just, you know, how us crazy monkeys get along with each other. And that was something that, you know, has been kicking around in my head actually for the last couple of days, because I keep thinking I got to sit down and write the other parts of the rest of my real book.
Yeah.
That sumbitch done so that I can start selling that thing.
You know, I've got a brilliant friend that's a writer. She writes short stories and stuff. I know the depth that you've got, but, you know, if you ever want to talk to her over the phone, maybe she can give you some tips or something. I have no idea.
Well, I'm sure for the short stories book, if she does short stories, we could collab.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially what your book's going to be, right? A bunch of series of short stories.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that would be, and it would just be so interesting just to, you know, complete fiction.
Yeah.
As opposed to the complete fact that I'm going to be writing for the other one. Now, I find I've already come up with some ideas of, I've already cleared it with Birth Mom, too, that I can take some liberties with the potential meets that never happen.
Yeah.
And some liberties with how she was. You know, since I first told you the story and we recorded it, my brain has been expanding out and trying to make this deeper and more, even more interesting than it really is.
Right.
Hey, Dr. Love Radio FM. Thanks for joining up.
It's almost like you got to put together an outline and connect all the subject you know, and with
fill in the details.
As right.
I, you know, like I said, I've got a couple of chapters written to, you know, 50-60% of the chapter. And then I've got maybe an outline that would cover about 60% of the book. And there's a bunch of other stuff. So, I mean, I'm more than halfway into this, but I just got to, I got to find some time to sit down and do this. Well, know, here I am talking to you.
Yeah. You could be writing
Podbean thing and I could be writing, but you know, dear God, there's not enough scotch on the planet to get me through this book.
Oh. Well, when I was going through high school and college, obviously we all had to write plenty of term papers and whatnot, but that's the way I always started. I always started off with an outline and I just kept expanding it. And I just put it in my own words and then put it all down and rewrite the whole thing. And that's exactly the way I did my every single term paper I had to do. It's the only way I can write. I have to get it all broken up into pieces and have it make sense in front of me and then do all the filler work in between. And then it became pretty easy, even though I never got A's, always got B's and C's, but
you got it done and you got it done.
I got it done.
You understand. Yeah,
exactly. You know?
All right.
I'm at a point where I might have to take a super quick station identification to pour myself a clear beer really quick. I don't know if what can we talk about? What can you explain to our viewers to give me enough time to pour a cocktail?
Oh, I don't know.
Well,
you know what? I can tell. I can ramble on for a couple minutes. Go pour something.
You got any good jokes or anything? Or?
No, this is just crazy personal stuff.
Oh, well, I can tell you this before it's only going to take me about 20 seconds, but do you eat Middle Eastern food?
Not that I'm aware of.
No. A buddy of mine I used to hang out with years ago got me into Middle Eastern food. And it's essentially like a pickled turnip. Middle Eastern food's like chicken tawouks, fattoush salads, tabbouleh, baba ganoush, all that kind of stuff. And
I grew up with a Greek family, one of my best buddies.
Okay, that's close,
So his ma was just a phenomenal cook. So
oh, God, the grape leaves? You
know, stuffed grape leaves, exactly. And then she made a Greek spaghetti, which had some cinnamon in it somehow. There was just this great meat recipe, and it was just like, oh, my gosh, this is the greatest stuff ever. I would.
You know, that kind of reminds me of?
Stomach got fat. What?
You ever eat pho or have pho, the Vietnamese soup?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
The pho comes in a bowl. It's usually got a meat bone in it or meat in it. And then it has your noodles and some vegetables. And it's made over a course of a day. So all the spice, everything kind of blends and meshes together. But it's
so
called
pho, like a long, long way to run?
Yeah, exactly. It's it's written pho, like pho, but you pronounce it pho.
Okay.
So when you were saying about cinnamon
not
stuff, when you're talking about cinnamon and all that, it kind of reminds me of pho. Really, really good soup. It's something you just eat all by itself. It'll fill you up, and it's awesome. But ramble on for like 30 seconds, and I'll jump right back in and make a quick cocktail.
All right. So just a complete different side note. I ran into one of my old friends from high school. She found or came across one of our other mutual friends through this weird, twisted sort of way of bumping into people. And this is a gal that, you know, all of our friends, we all knew each other growing up in high school and stuff. And everybody was kind of close and this, that, and the other. And there's like three or four people we completely lost touch with after graduation. And she was one of them and found out, I think it was yesterday. So like she knows where she is and all this stuff. And it's just kind of neat to go, oh, all right, well, maybe we'll reconnect. And then she texted me back. She's like, yeah, there's no chance. She doesn't want to talk to anybody she knew from high school and all this other stuff. And I'm like, all right, well, you know, God bless her. And hopefully the life choices she's made that put her where she's at is gonna make her happy, and you know, And of course, I'm trying not to give any real details because, you know, this is all fresh and brand new, and I don't want anybody getting in trouble or anything like that. But it was just the weirdest thing. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, oh, so she's okay. That's all I cared about, is making sure, hey, you know, it's somebody I haven't talked to in 34 years. Hope, you know, I hope you're okay. Yeah, she's okay. All right, good. Hopefully.
What are you talking about?
A friend of mine from high school. She just showed up on the radar again after 34 years of being off the radar completely.
Oh.
So.
Is she looking to rekindle?
No, not at all. Apparently, no. Apparently, she doesn't want to have anything to do with anybody.
Oh.
And well, you don't need to talk to her. Well, yeah. No, I didn't talk to her. I talked to a mutual friend who came across her in a weird sort of circumstance. But it was like, all right, well, excuse me, I hope everything works out, and, you know, good luck and God bless. But, you know, it's just one of those, it's just weird, you know, you lose touch with people, and then just weird things happen, and boom, there they are again. And it's like, all right, well, cool. Either, you know, the last thing, you know, I don't want to say, you know, I'm closing myself off to the world or anything, but I don't need any more friends.
Well, you know
what? I can barely keep up with the people that I want to keep up with.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel the same. I think Facebook's made that the issue. Facebook brought so many people together, maybe even not, I don't know what the word is, but not that you wanted to, it just happened. And it's almost overwhelming, you know? It's like, I don't really need to talk to all those people. I just want to talk to my people that I trust and are good friends, you know?
Well, and, you know, I if I have 200 friends on Facebook, I'd be surprised.
Yeah.
You know, most of them cousins and high school buddies and college friends and stuff like that. And it's nice to check in with them once in a while. And, you know, I have said in no uncertain terms to most of all my Facebook friends is, hey, if there's something you really need me to know, you've got my number. Call me.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of where I'm at with that. Facebook is sort of just a nice way to say, hey, I was doing this today, and the kids are great, and everything's fine, and here's a picture of somebody smiling, and, you know, let me share that with you. And it's just kind of a nice thing. And I actually, this past weekend, I broke up with Facebook again.
You broke up with Facebook?
Yeah. Well, I do it usually at the beginning of summer because I get busy and crazy and everything's going on. And,
basically
and
turn the thing
this
off.
This was obviously a different type of year, but what I do is, dear Facebook, it's not you, it's
right.
me. We've had some fun together. I really enjoyed our time together, but I'm finding myself going in a different direction, and I need to not spend as much time with you as I have in the past. It's not you, it's me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not seeing any other social media. I, you know, don't be jealous. I just don't have the time to dedicate to you to do the things that you want me to do, dear Facebook. And I like you and everything, but we're just not going to be able to spend as much time together as you thought.
Yeah.
But I do that just about every year. And it's just more of a, of course, me being smarmy and silly.
Long vacation.
Dear Facebook. Yeah, dear Facebook, it's not you, it's me.
I think I remember writing that a few times.
Yeah.
You know? Some old flames.
I kind of think that might be why this person we found recently doesn't want to talk to any of us, because it wasn't her, it was me.
Right. No, I know. Well,
so
what else was I going to say? I was talking about Middle Eastern food. So but what I was trying to say is that with Middle Eastern food comes that garlic sauce. I think they call it gnome. There's two versions of it. I think there's a Lebanese version, and there's also another type of version, but made very similar.
Yeah.
But I buy it by the 12-ounce container or whatever. And it's basically a bucket. And I
like a bucket of butter, except it's garlicky.
And I think I ate way too much today. I went to the store to pick up some clear beer, and the guy's like, Jesus, he goes, you smell like garlic. And I'm like, I must have ate, I don't even know, at 12 ounces, I probably ate two, but it's probably equivalent to, like, you know, 20 bulbs of garlic.
Yeah.
But anyways, putting that all aside, our podcast this evening, I think this could go for a long time. Are we live? I don't know if I even hit the button. We might not even be live. No. Oh, there we are.
Potek, join us.
Thanks for listening.
Hopefully I'm saying
Dr. Love.
Yeah.
Dr. Love. Oh, that was one of my favorite songs by Kiss, Dr. Love. Calling Dr. Yeah, Love.
You know, you and I'm surprised, and I didn't hear the intro because of tonight,
I just botched it really bad.
Stuff, but good. But did you say Detroit Rock City again?
Did I? Yeah.
You say that every time.
You don't like it?
You always say Detroit Rock City.
I know. I think it sounds cool. Well, I'm like, dude. It. Broadcasting from Detroit Rock City.
All right.
No.
Yeah.
What am I going to say? Broadcasting from Plymouth? No.
Oh, there is a restaurant named the Standard Pour.
Ah, where's that at?
He's gonna tell us where that's at. The Standard Pour. Oh, Sonora, California.
That's got to be up in there. Is that by like wine country?
Restaurant, it's got to be by wine country.
Is it up by? Is that my map?
Sounds to me like northern central.
Yeah.
Yeah, near Yosemite.
Yosemite. Yeah.
Yeah. That's for the people who can't speak English.
Yeah, or didn't go to school.
Right. Or if they're the president.
And my cousins have a place, I believe, near Yosemite. I don't know exactly where, but
when I worked in Arizona, I took the northern route to come home. And I went through some areas of the big fucking Yosemite? Ditch. No, what's the big fucking ditch?
Grand Canyon?
Thank you. I did a couple of crossovers of the canyon, a couple of different places, and it just freaking beautiful. And then up through Utah, and I was thinking about going to Yosemite, but I just didn't want to go that far north.
Right, right.
You know, I went across Wyoming and the Great Divide, and that was really cool.
And that's got to be a long ride, eh?
Well, it let me put it to you this way: I stopped in North Butte, Nebraska, and from North Butte, Nebraska, to Detroit is, I think, 19 or 22 hours or something like that.
Yeah.
I can't even remember what it's supposed to be.
Was this in an automobile or on your bike?
No, this is a car.
Yeah, okay.
And so I got in the car at 10 in the morning. I actually, in North Butte, there's a really large train station. The train junction area and a museum and stuff. So I went there in the morning because I wanted to get some pictures for my son who loved trains. And he was probably, he had to be 9 or 10 at the time. So it was kind of cool that daddy was stopping to get these pictures for him. And I sent him a bunch of pictures of these cool trains and how big the whole thing was. And it was just really neat.
Yeah.
But then about 10:30, 11 o'clock, I got on the road. I'm like, I just want to get home. I haven't seen my kids in a month.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I left to go on this job, I didn't think I was going to see my kids for like 3 months. Because nobody was – they were paying no expenses, and it was just like I had to go where the work was.
Yes, you want the job, take it. But...
Yeah, the job turned out to be a pile of feces and a stick. And so after getting my last check, I just left. But I left. Yeah. I left at like 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning from North Butte, and I drove. It was like maybe 11 or 12 at night when I got to Chicago, and I'm like, I should stop. I'm exhausted. I should stop.
Yeah. But
I'm like, you know what? I got to get home. Chicago. That's 6 hours, 5.5 hours. I'm doing it.
Right.
I got home at like 3:30, 4 in the morning. And just collapsed.
I bet.
But it was like, oh, God, I'm home. It's so nice to be home. But You know, that's I had I done what I wanted to do and had my family with me, we would have gone to Yosemite and looked at some stuff and spent some time.
Yeah.
And that was the whole point of me doing this traveling for work stuff, is so that I could have some money so that I could bring the kids to travel with me, or you know, at least come out and visit and do some stuff. Because, excuse me, we've done that in a couple of different locations where I worked, and it was nice.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a lot of extra money, and I was even less extra money back then. But to be able to do that and just let the kids see part of the country that who knows if they're ever going to get to see it. My dad did that for me.
Yep. You know,
let me put it this way. After that trip coming back, that was the year I turned 41, I think. And yeah, it had to be, because the year I turned 41 was the year I was in my 41st state.
Oh, so I got you. I've been to 41. You would remember something like that.
Yeah, I've been
to 41. Or make that connection.
Yeah, I've been to 41 out of 50 states. I need North and South Dakota and Montana. And then I need Alaska, Hawaii, and then the three up Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont.
Oh, yeah.
And those are the only states I haven't been to.
I know. I heard it's beautiful up there. I've only been as far as Connecticut.
Well, as
Connecticut's not much to talk about.
Massachusetts, no offense to anybody. Rhode Island was one of the fun ones because when I was working in New Jersey with a buddy of mine, he had been to 49 states. And the only one he hadn't been to was Rhode Island.
Oh, no kidding.
He's 10 years older than me. And I looked at him. I says, Tom, I'm taking you to Rhode Island next weekend. We got the rental car. I'm just going.
Yeah.
I'm driving. And I'm going to get – and I took the picture of him standing in front of the sign, welcome to Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And that was his 50th state. I was so happy to do that for him. And then we went, had lunch, and hung out for a little while and fucking left. Not a lot going on in Providence, man.
No. In fact, I watched that – there's a show with the Providence judge. I forgot what it's called, but it's actually a pretty fun show. Anyways, forget it.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
So that was fun. That was the travels of the world for a little while. But, you know, and it's funny. Here's a great segue. You'll get a kick out of this. So as I'm driving back from Arizona for that long-ass trip, this was right around the same time that my brother's second band put out their second album.
Yeah.
And he had sent me – actually, somehow I got a – he gave me a CD – of their, like, six of their songs before it went to the full album. And I was like, oh, this is great. And one of them was She's Always Doing Something, the one that I
right.
kind of inspired, which is weird because I told them one thing and they rewrote it and made it something completely different, and it was 98% better than what I thought it would ever turn out to be, because I have no skills when it comes to music. But regardless... He gives me the CD, and the entire time driving home, the CD was playing that, and I popped in some Romantics and some other, you know, just CDs. I brought probably a small box of CDs to go with me on this trip, knowing that I'm not going to have a lot of access to music or whatever, and whatever
right.
I could cram onto my iPod for when I was in the hotel rooms and whatever. And I'm sitting there going, wow, this is just great music, man. Detroit's got some great music. And then I start thinking, I'm like, well, what are some of the things that some of those great songs that really meant something? How about that for a segue, huh? What are some of those great songs that really meant something? And, you know, I look at the Rockets, you know, and, I don't even know where to go with this, but I mean, if you break it down to like, Figures on a Beach.
Yep.
And I'm just going with like Detroit bands, the Rockets, Figures on a Beach. There was a band when I was on that boat that one of the chefs really liked. It was a local group. Artie Wolf and the Pack.
I've heard of it. I don't know if I've heard them.
Total rockabilly, good, fun, silly music, very bluesy, but had, you know, certain just, it wasn't like hardcore depressing blues. It was that rhythm and blues type sound, but it was fun and it was exciting. And I'm like, these are the things that got me excited about music and then local music, because the Romantics were awesome. And like I said, Figures on a Beach and this Artie Wolf in the Pack. And then I'm listening to my brother and his band. And I'm like, you know, this is fun music.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Detroit has this great history of fun music, you know, even fun music for stuff that I don't even like, you know, I mean, I'm not a fan of Eminem, but I know people like him.
And I just like his one song.
I don't like anything that
he the 8 Mile song, Lose Yourself or whatever.
I can tolerate.
I think it was done pretty well, and I love it because it's about Detroit and about how
here's my thing though, is it's not the sound that I like. And I listen to music for the sound. I drink scotch, I drink scotch for the taste. I listen to music for the sound.
And all right, well, let me ask you something.
Hold on, let me finish this.
All right, go ahead.
But
go ahead.
To me, Eminem is not a sound that I enjoy.
I gotcha.
But I understand the skill level and the talent that he has. I can appreciate the effort, and I can appreciate that other people like him. It's just nothing. If it comes on the radio, I'm turning it off.
Yeah.
Not that I can't stand the guy, because, again, I appreciate his talent and skill, and he is catering to a group of people that enjoy that type of music, and that's awesome. Everybody needs to have something that they can listen to and enjoy.
Yeah.
His stuff, not my bag. Do I appreciate the fact that he's a talented individual? Oh, hell yeah. You know, there's a lot of them out there that I'm like, yeah, that's some talent. Not my bag, but that's some talent.
Well, and this brings me up to a question. We've talked about this many a times. And I get into these discussions with other people that don't necessarily have the depth that you do in music, and can, you know, we can all, between the two of us, can appreciate artists and whether it's blues or jazz or 80s or Detroit or whatever. A lot of people I talk to are fixed on, oh, they like the country music, and they think all the new country music today is country music, and you know, they think Garth Brooks has got some good talent, but I'm saying like, I don't know, Kenny Chesney or something. He thinks, oh, that guy's a genius or something. I'm like, he sounds just like anybody else in pop country today. There's nothing great about his writing. There's no unique style he has, you know. And it goes, what I'm getting at is, it goes back to the people that are well-read and the people that listen to different music. In other words, I always talk about Tom Waits. People are like, oh, I can't stand that guy. He's terrible. But if you understand where he came from and why he writes and the talent he got, that he has as a songwriter, and how he makes up instruments and he beats on steel cans and he does, you know, beats on whatever.
He's a very creative individual.
Eclectic, creative. But it's like a good book. If you read the classics on the books, they're not all great, but if you understand why they were written and the meaning behind it, they almost kind of parlay together. And I know you know what I'm talking about.
I do. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And I think that for me, a little bit with Eminem, even though I don't like his music at all, except for that song, I think he did a phenomenal job on that song. I think it's exactly what he wanted to say. But you give me an album, I won't play it. I don't really care about anything else that he's written. I have no interest in it. But, you know, I hear that about Tom Waits. Like, the guy's lousy. He can't sing, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But you know, we all, I guess, take something from, you know,
and
the music that we hear and how we relate to it.
That's the beautiful thing about music, is it's so personal. It is so very personal.
Yeah.
And it's because, you know, did you grow up listening to the Beatles? Did you grow up listening to the Stones? And a lot of times it's an either or situation.
Yeah.
Because of that,
kind of brings us to our topic a little bit, but go ahead.
That's why I said, what a great segue. Because, you know, driving all that time and listening to all this music and having all that time with your own thoughts. I'll tell you, you want to learn something about yourself, just drive somewhere for 12 hours.
Oh, I know.
Alone, I've thought about it. Alone in a car with your thoughts and your music.
Yeah.
And you will learn so much about yourself.
Maybe we should get a couple of motorcycles and do a podcast cross country.
Nope. not just riding a motorcycle again.
Just a thought. Mm-hmm. We'll rent a Lincoln or a Cadillac. Yeah, we'll rent a Cadillac and we'll go do it or something, or a truck.
No, we'll
or
get one of those. Get one of those RV things.
Yeah, a small one.
We'll have our own place to,
yeah, that's good.
Place to crash and a fridge.
It's not bad. It's not bad. Not a bad idea.
But you want to learn something about yourself. You get on the road and you drive somewhere for 12 hours and listen to music.
Yeah.
And keep it quiet and get lost in your own thoughts. But you got to be in that car alone or with one other person who's going to inspire your brain to start thinking.
Yeah, I used to do that commuting back and forth to Maryland. I only drove back and forth twice. But, you know, you're in the car 8-9 hours. And,
right.
You know, you said you're shuffling through your CDs, your music. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's it can be very therapeutic. And like you said, you can find yourself and, you know.
It's like, I don't know, that first 2 hours is you just all caught up with your current life and what's going on. But after right. that fourth and fifth hour, you're thinking about shit that you haven't thought about in years. And your brain goes, all right, well, we got to keep the eyeballs entertained. We got to keep something going on in here so that we can keep you awake so you can make this drive. And your brain just starts going into overdrive and going, what about this? And what about this? And then life things start coming up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Big questions come up and you're like, well, how would I address this?
Or, sure.
You know, that's how I started thinking about Bible shit.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. My big buddy, he just invited me to, Ontario. They go like every other year, but it's 17 hours north of here. Mm-hmm. And they drive up in an RV with a bunch of guys, and you get to the point where you can't go any further, and you park your car, lock everything up, you pile everything into a seaplane, and they take you out another 40 minutes on a seaplane. They drop you off at the water in front of some cottages, and there you go. You're going to spend the next 5-7 days in the middle of nowhere to basically do whatever you want to do. Yeah, no cell phone, no nothing.
That sounds peaceful.
Yeah. So I'm signed up for that next year, but
yeah,
we'll see.
We definitely got to talk about that after I'm back. Cause that's something, but no, back to the music thing. It really came down to from doing all these drives and traveling back and forth, you know, even just the 2.5 hours I would drive to and from school in college, we'd always have tunes playing. And
yeah.
There's 3 or 4 of us in the car, you know, oh, you got to hear this song. Oh, you got to hear this song. And it became just a series of, oh, this is a great song. And this is a great song. And why is this so good? And, you know, oh, the bass line is perfect. And, or, you know, the drums are just right. Or there's just something about getting into music and just talking about it that I just love.
Right. Yeah. There's a few people I know that they don't have any passion for music. They don't listen to it. And I always have a hard time believing that there's people out there that are not into music like they should be, you know?
Well,
I think everybody should have a connection to music somehow.
Even if just to appreciate it. Like I said,
yeah.
if you're not a big music fan, you should at least understand the basics and why. It's like reading classic literature. I am not a big fan of classic literature, but you need to understand the themes because those themes recur in life in general.
Yeah, no
kidding.
Those are
themes. Those are stories about things that have happened to even mythical creatures or mythical people. And they go through the same stuff that you and I are going to go through in our lifetimes.
Yep.
There's some way to connect to it. And even if you don't make the connection with music, make a connection with some other kind of artwork.
Sure.
Whether it be paintings or photos, you know, photography or, you know, literature even. Make some kind of connection so that you can keep your brain going.
Right, right.
Thoughts moving around in your head. Keep life interesting.
Yeah.
At a certain point, you know, like I said, with my work, I'm over it. I'm at the point where I'm running on empty, and my wheels are spinning, and I'm just doing the work to do the work because I need to do the work, and it needs to get done. And I need to live indoors, wear clothes, and eat food. So that's what the work is. I'm over the fact that everybody thinks everything is so important. I don't care anymore. It's done.
Right.
So where do you go once you don't care anymore? You go to some kind of creative thought process. And having a creative thought, you know, having this podcast has been great. A nice release for me to be able to go, all right, well, I can at least talk to one of my buddies. And if four people who aren't related to us actually listen, that'd be great. You know,
yeah.
If we make 38 cents a year on this, this would be awesome. But, you know, the whole fact of the matter is it keeps my brain alive and keeps me thinking about stuff. And that's just, that's any kind of artwork, any kind of good stuff.
Well, hey, we're 55.
Thanks for joining us, Spam and Rice.
Yeah, we're 56 minutes into the show, Bill. Do you think we can talk about our most influential 80s albums and formats? Or do you think we should...
No, you start.
Well, I think we should gear up for another show here.
Well, we can do another show on all about that. But go ahead and give me a couple of things to think about. Because I basically, all this week, when you threw this topic out, all this week I've been just throwing stuff on my notepad on the computer at work while I'm working and just going, oh, yeah, this song. Because I listen to music all day at work anyway.
Right.
Oh, yeah, this song. Oh, yeah, I remember this one. This was great. And so I spat up a whole bunch of bands. And, of course, my focus was the Detroit local bands because that's what got me into Detroit local music, which was, you know, the Figures on a Beach, the Romantics, the Rockets, you know, different stuff like that. You know, MC5. You know, those were just great bands and put out great albums and good music. And it was just interesting stuff for me. And so that's where I was, but I didn't really write down most influential albums.
Well, what I was getting at is the albums that you listened to back in the 80s that meant something to you. And there's, like, for me, there's a ton of REM albums that I love. I still love today. Not many that have gotten old except for maybe some of their poppier stuff that happened in the 90s. But their early 80s stuff is never gotten old with me. But I could take an album
Reckoning.
Yeah, and, Murmur. I can take an album like Murmur, and I can put it on right now. It doesn't feel any different than when I first heard it originally, 30 years ago. And there's something to be said about that, you know?
But what it does is it takes you back. And that's the other thing about music is it takes you back to the time when you first heard it.
Yeah.
You know?
I remember
a time when you listened to that album for the 17th time and it made a difference in something you were doing. Like I said, when I was driving back from Arizona and I listened to the Romantics and Loverboy, Get Lucky.
Oh, hey, good album. Good
and
album.
I was like, oh, yeah, Turn Me Loose, baby. And it just, you know, going in and just and listening to Turn Me Loose four times in a row, driving through Wyoming, coming down the big hill off the plateau and just going, oh, this is just, you know, and you're doing 90 miles an hour and you're not supposed to. But just enjoying the heck out of it. And it just takes you somewhere. And that's what I love about music because it takes you somewhere.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Puts you back somewhere.
Well, maybe that's a better way to talk about instead of the most influential albums, maybe it's the most remembered songs and why. I don't know. I don't know. In other words, the group In Living Color, Cult of Personality. Every single time I hear that song, it reminds me of driving on the beach in Daytona. I mean, it goes right back to it. Me and my buddy, we split, you know, because we're all on budgets back then. We're talking back in the early 90s. We're barely probably 20, 21 years old. And he's like, well, you give me $6 and I'll give you $6. We'll go buy the cassette. We bought the cassette of In Living Color, called whatever. I forgot the name of the album, but we listened to it with the windows down, blaring down the beach, and it was a song that just came out and was one of the big songs, whatever, blah blah. But every single time to this day, I hear it. It reminds me of all of us in my truck driving up and down the beach in Daytona, and that's some of the stuff that I love. You know,
I have the same feeling for the four song album that Figures on a Beach put out. In '83, me and my buddies my high school buddies, we would go to the park, and I told you about jumping off the diving boards after having rum slurpees.
Yeah.
And but we would Figures on a Beach was that was one of them. That and Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, relax and just you know, all of that almost anthem type 80s stuff, but not the rock anthem stuff. The new wave type thing. All those Nothing things take me back to just, you know, swimming around.
Hat Full of Hollow by the Smiths was a big one too.
Oh yeah. How Soon Is Now? One. You can't you can't get away from How Soon Is Now.
No, that's iconic.
And then, of course, you know, there's Girlfriend in the Coma. That was
right.
one of my college buddies just thought that was the best song ever because it's just so dark but so happy sounding.
Right.
The irony in that song is just so fun. And but it brings me back to playing euchre with all my buddies.
Yeah. College, yeah.
You know, and every song that I could play of the, you know, 350 to 500 CDs I got sitting in my basement right now, every one of those songs I could listen to and tell you a story about when I heard it or about,
sure,
you know, something. And there's no way on the planet that I have enough time in the world to explain all that stuff. But I would just encourage people, you know, the four of you who are listening who are not related to us, find the music that you love and listen to it and find the story behind that experience for you. And, you know, maybe Sunday when we do our show, share that with us.
You know, yeah,
we are not the kind of guys that are opposed to people calling in and sharing a story about when they heard this song. I don't care if it's a crappy ass song by Rush.
Yeah.
You know, and I actually kind of liked Rush back in grade school. Talented, remarkably talented. But yeah, again, not my bag. You right. know,
it's for a Canadian band, anyways.
I remember listening to Styx in my buddy's basement. We put on, what was it, the one?
Grand Illusion.
Welcome to Paradise or?
Grand Illusion.
Paradise Theater, Grand Illusion, one of those.
Yeah.
One of those early Styx albums. And then switching it over to AC/DC Back in Black.
Yeah, yeah.
When Back in Black was just out and it was on vinyl. And, you know, we just.
That's another album. That's never get old. That really stuck through my whole childhood was Back in Black.
Oh yeah. Well, and it's, but you know, now I find there are remixes of Back in Black that, you know, mashups or something like this, and I'm just like, that's just fun. Somebody took a classic song and made even more fun with it. And I am not opposed to any of that stuff. I like it when they do remixes and remakes of songs because it's just like, give me a 12-inch version of New Order.
Right,
maybe
right.
A 14-minute version of Thieves Like Us.
Yeah, yeah.
Just let it play, and just because those rhythms, those grooves, that's just I dig it. It's just my stuff. You
it's
know?
Good stuff.
And let somebody make dubstep out of REM, just for shits and giggles.
Do you think any of you go back and you look at all the '80s albums and the time in the '80s? Do you think that will ever be recreated? In other words, I mean, I don't know if music can be made the same way and have the same effect on people. And maybe it's just because we grew up in the 80s, but all the music today seems so far away from it. You know, it seems so in-ear.
Okay. You gotta let me finish this thought.
Go ahead.
So I'm exhausted yesterday and I'm flipping around channels and PBS has this thing on, like a recent thing on the slave trade and basically from the 1600s to now of how the life of the slaves and all this, just like it, I think it's going to, I recorded all four or five episodes and they're like 2 hours a piece. So
yeah.
This is like, you know, a huge mini series on the history of the slave trade and how slaves are treated and how the war came about, the Civil War and all this stuff. And there was a moment where they just touched on it with when the families were breaking up and you know they were there was a particular short period where there was this mass exodus from the northern area to the deep south of selling slaves, and you know you're on the plantation in the northern south, and they're gonna sell your relative to somebody in the deep south, and they're gonna be right forever. And there was this just a hint of a touch of a discussion on how these Negro spirituals would come out and they would sing. Everybody would leave the fields and they would sing to this person leaving.
Really?
That's, and it was just, and I got to rewatch this whole thing, but, and I'm listening to this going, that is the history of the blues right there.
Exactly.
That's where the blues started, was from the slave trade. And as much as I loathe the idea of owning another human being, I appreciate the fact that it happened. I don't like that it happened, but I appreciate that it happened because of rhythm and blues, because of blues and Negro spirituals from the slave era, music started to develop and change in every decade, just a little bit different, a little bit different. But there was always this underlying blues of just people being tormented and it was just horrible. And they really told a good story. PBS did a really good job from the 2 hours that I was actually able to stay awake and watch.
I'll have to look that up.
But I'm listening to this and I'm going, this is the history of music. The music that I like starts here.
Right.
And it's
right.
No wonder that I feel for these people for the plight that they had to deal with, because I remember going to St. Elizabeth's, a Catholic church in Detroit. And it was an old white Catholic church, white Polish Catholic church. And over the years, sort of got taken over by the local population, predominantly black local population. And the choir was at a certain point at their height when I was probably 10 or 11, 12 years old. This choir was essentially 50, 60 black women the size of a Buick.
And, right.
And like 10 or 12 black guys.
With probably the most beautiful voices you ever heard in your life.
Oh my God, Eric, it was like angels singing the blues. It was
it could jerk a tear out of my eye.
It was the most emotional. I loved going to that church because of that choir, because these are people that love their Jesus, and they were singing to high heaven.
Right.
The pain was palpable. You could taste it.
Comes through in their song.
In the flats. And the minor keys and all of the stuff that just brings it. And there would be times I'd walk out of there with wet eyes.
Oh, I bet. I'd be the
same
way.
Almost every time but it was an emotional feeling. And I loved that church. It's since closed down, I think. And that choir is gone, long gone, probably 20 years now. But there's something there. There's a connection that I feel because my dad took me to that church.
Oh, I bet. I bet.
And when I hear, I've actually done some research on Negro spirituals from the slave era online and done some things. And I've printed out some sheet music actually. And I want to figure out how to play some of this stuff, but it's very complicated. And just because none of it was ever really written down until much after.
Yeah.
Because there was no people, they weren't allowed to learn how to read and write.
Yeah, I was going to say it's probably a non-traditional way of writing,
Just an absolute crime.
Yeah.
You know, and basically what I want you to understand is under no circumstances do I condone any type of slavery of any type or any type of bullying of any type, which is the the light end of it. But because of all this and all that shit back then, we have now this beautiful history of music.
Right.
Sadly, it came out of pain, but sometimes the most creative stuff does come from a place of discomfort and pain.
Yeah. It's the history you have to appreciate. It's
and this is why I love history so much, because as you can tell, I got a little bit fired up.
I'm starting to think like maybe I should start watching some of this stuff myself and reading a few books on history. It's been quite a while since college.
But if you
that was just world history, big deal.
If you understand your history of even of your own country, let alone the world history. I've taken a number of European history courses in high school and college. I've taken I'm not sure if I have enough credits to get a minor in Native American history or not. But I took a number of courses in basically how shitty we were to the Native American people.
Right.
And the reasons why. And the reasons why were very selfish.
Yeah,
we got to plant more cotton. Let's get these people out of our way.
Sure, do whatever it takes to get them out of our way.
Right, and the 1800s were not a pretty time. We're still reeling from a lot of those problems that we haven't solved yet.
No, the big question is, will it ever be solved? You know,
well, it can be if we have people who actually think about it and understand their history. And go, yeah, we don't want to do that again. Let's follow this idea to its logical conclusion. Does it help more people or hurt more people? What should be done?
Yeah.
And if we can find people who are logically thinking and can follow this and are not sold into some, without getting all religious on you or anything like this, but one of the reasons why I have a big issue with religion in general, aside from the original sin issue, which is, I think is
hush.
No, don't.
No, I'm kidding.
The problem I have is a lot of Southern plantation owners use the Bible and verses from the Bible to say, well, slavery is fine.
Right,
because
it's
in the Bible. And in my eyes, I don't care what generation you're in or what part of time as a human being you're in, owning other people is never okay.
No.
It just isn't.
No, I know.
And I also understand that I'm saying that with my 20th century, 21st century understanding of life.
Yeah.
But you also got to realize that that's another person. You don't just own other people.
Right. Right.
I made three of my own people, and they're their own people.
Sure.
You know, that I don't. I've taught them what I think is the right way to handle things, and I've taught them how to handle issues and problems. And I think my wife and I have done a pretty good job of raising adults who can rationalize, understand,
sure.
and make good decisions, because we've taught them how to go ahead and make good decisions. But I don't own those people.
No.
Yeah, I made them. I made three people, but I don't own them. They're their own people. And they're going to go and do what they want. And sometimes they're going to do stuff that I don't completely agree with. And that's just not my problem.
But it's them, right? We've all been down that road.
Right.
If my parents knew half the stuff that I did, they'd probably be a little bit more disappointed. But everything came out okay. You know, it's what you live and learn. You know?
And if you don't teach them how to learn and grow, then you're selling yourself short. You're selling their lives short. You're not doing the right thing for them.
Yeah.
So.
Well.
That's my done. I'm done preaching. But really,
yeah, no, it's,
if you can find that PBS special on slavery.
I'm going to look it up.
It was on last night, and I know I recorded it. If I find out what it is at some point when I do it, I'll text it to you.
Yeah, I've got access to PBS, so I'll look it up.
Yeah,
I'm interested to hear about that.
And it's
it kind of inspires me.
I know there's four or five episodes, and they're at least 2 hours apiece.
Yeah.
We got to understand our history in order to understand where we're going to go.
I agree.
I know that whole tangent came because of music, but again, music can save you.
Yeah, well, this is going to be a good lead-in for our Sunday. I think we should continue this podcast on Sunday, kind of right along the same lines, and kind of continue on this topic. You know, it's a good topic to talk about.
Well, I like talking about it with you. I don't give a shit if anybody else listens. But you know, no. That's my thought from the beginning is
sure.
This is me and my buddy Eric having a chat. And if other people listen to it and throw beans at us or whatever the hell else it is.
Yeah.
And we end up
or Benjamin's.
Yeah. We end up making 14 cents a year. That's great.
Yeah. So
either way, you and
it's 14 cents. We had more, you know,
right, exactly. Want to look at it. You know, that's almost an eighth of an ounce of scotch. Yeah, you know, you got to figure it out. So, but yeah,
let's do this.
Hey, Eric, before
Bill?
We do this,
yeah.
where can people find us if they decide they want to find us?
You know, I'm starting to forget, but we can go to Spotify. We can go to iHeartRadio. We can go to Deezer. You can go to YouTube. You can go to Google Podcasts.
Nice.
Those are some of the ones off the top of my head. I'm sure there's probably two or three more. We are waiting to get approved on a couple. It takes some get approved pretty quick, and some take a little bit longer.
Hey, are we on iTunes?
And we are on iTunes. iTunes just changed over to Apple Podcast, I believe. So it's no longer considered iTunes, Apple Podcast. Yeah.
Nice.
So we're out there. We are out there. We can be listened to. And I think we've got some listeners in France. We've got some listeners in, I believe, Ireland. Along what? With, obviously, yeah, I'll prove it to you. I'll show you the statistics.
Well, you know something? If we got listeners in Ireland, I want to talk to those peoples.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm throwing the gauntlet down right now that I need to talk to someone because I lived in Ireland for a while. And I need to talk to some of my people.
I will look up the statistics on it, and I will share them with you, and we can go from there.
Well,
see how we tap into them.
I'm just saying, if any of our Irish friends have listened this long and lasted right to the end of our bullshit, you know, when do we go on? Usually Wednesday nights at 9 o'clock, Sunday nights at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, Wednesdays and Sundays at 9.
Wednesdays and Sundays at 9 for the Low Standards and Poor's podcast. I need my Irish peoples to show up. I love the accent. And before you even tell me where you're from, I want to hear you talk for a little bit so that I can try and pick out what county you're from with your accent. Because I used to be awesome at that. I used to be able to figure out where people were from just by their accent. But it's been years. And, you know, I'm out of practice.
Good touch for you.
But I'd sure love to try, and I'd love to be wrong, but I sure just love hearing the sing-song, a good Cork accent, or the good gruff of the Connemara-type accent. Anyway, sorry. I got lost in the moment.
No, you're good. Let's wrap this up, Bill.
Yeah.
And then I think this will give us a good outro to our intro for next week. Or I'm sorry, Sunday. I'm sorry. I guess it's next week, and we'll continue on. I think we can kind of move on to our most influential albums and songs in the '80s, and I'm sure we can probably fill up a third podcast on that. And maybe
give me talking about music again. That'll be scary. So that was Eric,
And that is Bill.
Last I checked.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. We're going to be on Sunday, 9 o'clock.
Yep.
Please listen in. And don't be afraid. Don't be too shy to call in. We'd love to have you on and talk to you. And
Be there or be an obtuse rhomboid.
Exactly. It's the same thing I was going to say.
Yeah,
and thanks for listening.
Part where you hang up on me.
Yeah, I think I'm going to.
No, go ahead.
No.
Go ahead.
Well, you hang up this time.
You hang up.
I think it's your turn.
I'm not hanging up. You hang up.
All right. All right, we'll talk to you during the week. See you later, Gator.
Hang up.